Today on Family Talk.
Welcome to Family Talk with your host, psychologist and author, Dr. James Dobson. We want to start off with a question today. Have you ever felt unloved or rejected? Have you ever longed to be included, only to find out that you were left on the sidelines yet again? Now, most of us have had that experience once in a while, but can you imagine if that went on for years and years? In fact, if that described your whole life? Well, that was the reality for one of the men in the classic broadcast we will share with you today, until Mike Atkins brought friendship and love into that man's life. And I tell you, Doctor, this is a life-changing story.
It is, and I'm anxious to let our listeners hear it. For those who have heard it in the past, they will be thrilled again and deeply moved. And for those that are hearing for the first time, this is a, as you said, a life-changing story. By the way, Roger, thank you for being here to introduce the program. I always enjoy working with you.
Likewise. It's a privilege to be here, Dr. Dobson.
All right. We're going to hear one of the most popular broadcasts that I've ever been associated with in my 39 years on the air. Since I started in radio back in 1977, I have recorded or aired more than 9,000 programs, and I tell you that this is one of the most moving. I think I would have to say that it is the most popular program we have ever aired. And so we bring it to our audience today with a smile on our face because I know how this program will feel. It's funny and it's deeply moving. It's called A Man Called Norman. Some of you will recognize that from way back in the 80s. In fact, I think the first time it ever aired was in 1984. That was it, Focus on the Family. And it just touches people. It speaks right to the loneliness, Roger, that you talked about, that so many people feel at one time or another. And I think that's why it has such a timeless message, because it affects the human family. When I hear this recording, I can't help but think about the people in nursing homes and assisted living facilities. Mm-hmm. Some of them have lost all or most of their family, and nobody comes to see them. Nobody visits them. It's heartrending to know that there are millions of those people out there who don't have anyone to sit down and talk to. And this broadcast reminds us to reach out and touch someone.
Indeed, indeed. And that is definitely one of the best things about this program, isn't it? The response that we get from listeners after it airs, because they're so moved, they're so touched by this.
Yeah, and as I said, I'm always amazed by the response. Over the years, we hear about people who looked around, found a lonely person in their neighborhood, and try to reach out the way Mike Atkins does. This is his story. Mm-hmm. Well, let me introduce Mike Atkins a little better. Mike is an evangelist. He's an author. He's a singer and songwriter with an international denominational ministry of praise. He lives in Illinois with his wife, Carmel, and he has gone all over the world singing and speaking and teaching God's children how to praise.
Excellent.
This is a great friend that I've worked with since 1984. And with that, let's listen to the powerful program on today's classic edition of Family Talk.
We bought a house. God led us to it, got us a marvelous deal on it. It's the kind of house I loved. It's an old house that I could work on and fix up. First thing I did, I said, I just see in my mind what this house was going to look like when I got finished. Didn't look that way now, but when I finished and I started with the lawn out in the front, there was an old tree that had rotted and fell down, and I was going to fill in that little hole in the ground, and just, there was still a little bit of a stump. I was going to cut that out, fill the hole in, make it nice and smooth. I forgot, since we prayed, I forgot to check first to see who lived around me. Because I trusted the Spirit of God, you know, that He would take care of those little things like that. And I'm going to tell you who lived right around the house I bought. On my left was a Catholic couple, their family. And on my right, I told you just backwards, on my right was a Catholic couple. On my left was a retired Methodist preacher. We became dear friends. And right across the street was a widow lady. And next door to her is the one I want to tell you about. It was an old, we used to, when his kids called them old haunted looking houses. Now we had a fellow in our town that everybody used to laugh at. Not everybody, you know what I mean, but generally, and the kids, we'd throw snowballs at him in the wintertime. He was weird. He was strange. You know, he was, a lot of people call him your town jokes. They're in every town, I notice. This fellow's name was Norman. Old Norman. He was 6 foot two thereabouts, and he wore an old felt looking hat that had so much dirt and oil in it you couldn't tell what it looked like originally. Wore overalls that were just grease soaked. He had old house shoes that he'd flop around town in, sometimes rubber galoshes, and they just flop when he walked up and down the street. And he'd walk real fast up and down Main Street like this, just and real fast, and then he'd stop and he'd talk to himself. I said, hey. And he'd do that all over Main Street. And people would say, boy, he's weird, isn't he? I didn't even think anybody lived there at first. And that day that I was out there working on my tree stump, going to fix the yard, in my coveralls, barefoot, my wife and kids had gone uptown to the grocery store or something. I'm digging around the tree stump, going to saw it out. And I look over there. He walked out of that house, and I saw that he lived there, and I said, oh, no. I said, Lord, that's weird Norman over there. I said, you had me by the house across the street from weird Norman. I said, now, Lord, he's, you know, I don't know exactly what's wrong. I hear a lot of rumors, but I got two daughters, and he's strange. Hey, you know, he might harm them, I thought. And so I watched him. He came down to come out to the sidewalk and go uptown or somewhere, and I said, hi, Norman. He looked at me, and he went, took off down the street. A couple days later, I was out there working on the same tree stump. He came out again. This time, he came out to work on his lawnmower out in the backyard. Something was wrong with it. It wouldn't run. He worked with it. He looked like he was getting disgusted, and I was watching him. I thought, boy, he really is strange. And then he did something that I'll never forget for eternity. He stood up as tall as he could. He looked like the Incredible Hulk. He raised his arms. He looked at me. He glared at me, and he ran from the back of his yard where I could just see him out to the side of the house, down the side of the house, right at me, stopping at his sidewalk. Praise God, he ran at me and screamed at the top of his lungs. He went, ah! My heart was going, I had a little tool in my hand my brother-in-law made in the shop class at the high school had given it to me. And I remember saying, now, Lord, I know we're supposed to love everybody, but if he comes over here, Lord, I'm going to defend myself. He went back to the lawnmower, and he fooled around with it a little more, got angry some more, ran at me again, stopped at his sidewalk. Every time, three times he did that, three times he stopped at his sidewalk. Suddenly, the presence of the Lord settled all over me. It seemed that faith or confidence, or I don't know the right word, more than I normally possessed, it began to well up in me, and I did something that surprised even me. I got up, barefoot, coveralls, walked across that street, and walked up to Norman in his backyard by his lawnmowers. I said, you having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman? He looked at me, and he said, you having trouble with your lawnmower, Norman? I said, I just said that to myself. I said, I'm not much of a lawnmower mechanic, Norman. And I heard him say, I'm not much of a mechanic, Norman. As I looked at him, cleaned the spark plug, tightened a screw or two. I don't know anything about a lawnmower. And I prayed and pulled that rope, and it ran like it'd been to the repair shop. Just hum, just And he did something for the first time I saw when he grinned real big. I saw a green and yellow tooth right here. And I saw one over here and one here and one here. And those spectacles he had on looked like Coke bottles. They were thick, and he had whiskers, had that old hat. But there he was grinning at me. And after that, every time he'd come out of the house and I'd say, hi, Norman, he'd go, hello. And then he'd take off down the street. Men in my town said, I reckon what's the matter with Norman? Well, he's in the barber shop. You know, that's where you find out things in town. And especially our small town. And one fellow said, I know what it is. Norman was hit by a Greyhound bus once, I heard. Now, another fellow said, no, Fred, that's not it at all. What happened to Norman was he was brilliant. He was a genius. Everybody in the barbershop was... He said, in fact, he was such a genius that his mind exploded one day. But God didn't care about all that. He said to me, beginning to put a little seed way down here deep in my heart for the first time, he said, witness Jesus to him. Well, okay, Lord, I'll... One night after church, it is tradition in our town to go to the Dairy Queen. And the scene was always the same. You know, whoever got out first, whoever had the 20-minute service got there first, got their ice cream, sat down. Then the church that had the 25-minute service, they followed, and they got there next. They got their ice cream. They always waved at one another. Hi, Bill. Hi, John. Hi. Hi, Betty. How's your family? Fine. How was church? Oh, wonderful. Never had heard anybody have a bad service. And everybody be waving and smiling in the Dairy Queen. And everybody be eating their ice cream. I've done it myself. I'm not saying anything about my neighbors I wouldn't say about myself. I was doing it myself. I was sitting there eating ice cream one night, and I smiled at everybody. Guess who walked in right in the middle of all that? Thank you. He comes, gets his ice cream cone. He always sits there right in the same seat. And every Christian in the place, especially Brother Mike, who travels around the country lifting up Jesus and singing adoration, I rushed over to him and gave him the four spiritual laws. No. I did what everybody else did. I act like I didn't see him. We gave him room. We didn't talk about him or to him about Jesus. I've always wondered why, now that I tell this story, I thought, well, I guess it's because if somebody saw me talking to him, they might think I'm as strange as he is. And the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me and said, quietly, and don't make a show out of it, go over and tell him about Jesus. I said, Carmel, pray for me. I'm going to go talk to Norman. She's getting used to that kind of action, and she prayed, and I went over there, and I sat down, and real quick, and I said, hi, Norman, you remember who I am? He said, you remember who I am? I said, well. I said, Norman, listen, I'm your neighbor. He said, I'm your neighbor. And he looked at me out of those eyes, out of those thick glasses, and I said, Norman, do you know who Jesus is? He said, do you know who Jesus is? I said, because people were beginning to look, I said, Norman, did you ever think about asking Jesus to come into your heart and your life? He never repeated me. For the first time, he said, I've given it serious consideration. I was shocked. A couple nights later, the Lord said, 700 Club's going to have an extra special good program on tonight. Invite Norman. Hey, Norman. Hey, Norman, y'all come over tonight and watch television. 700 Club got a big tuck. Come on. Well, the Lord wanted to witness to him. He said, okay. He dressed up for us that night. He didn't take a bath. He didn't put on different clothes. He put on an old string tie that somebody had given him. Hung about like that, and here he come across the street that night. And he come up the steps, and he came in the house. I've got a chair that is light-colored gold, very light, velvet, kind of, it's my lazy boy. I love it. I crank it out, and, you know, go, and I love it. It's right in front of the television. And the Lord said, get him there where he can see, because he's got those glasses, and I want to witness to him. And I said, Norman, come on in. We're really glad to have you tonight at our house. Lied. I said, sit down over here in my chair. He sat down in my chair, and he watched 700 Club. He was witness to. My wife sat back here, and I sat back here, and we watched him watch 700 Club. And after a while, he got up and said, thank you very much. And he started out the door, and I went over and turned the light on for him. I said, watch the steps now. Good night, Norman. Good night now. Come back. And good night. Closed the door. I ran in the house, ran over to my chair. I looked at my chair. There wasn't a spot on it. It was like no one had ever sat there. It was clean. My wife sprayed a little bit of stuff in the air, and the house smelled real good, and we couldn't even tell he'd been there. A few days later, the Lord said, take him somewhere with you. I said, hey, Norman, you ever go to the St. Louis baseball game? Busch Stadium, St. Louis?
No. Like to.
I said, we'll go. Picked him up just a few days later. It was hot weather by this time. He come out with one of the longest wool tweedy looking winter coats on you've ever laid eyes on. It touched him about his shoes, and he's big, tall. He looked like the Gray Ghost when he come out of the house. I said, "Norman, you're not going to need that coat. It's hot, you know. We're going to be outdoors. And he said, I said, "Norman, you're not. Get in the car, Norman." Turned the air conditioner wide open, headed up the interstate to St. Louis. He kept looking at that CB radio. Finally, I said, "Talk on that thing. Here, push that button and talk." I said, "Hey, man. Breaker, we got a fella here never had a CB, never been around one before. He mows lawns around our town for a living, and he cleans ashes out of the furnaces in the wintertime." I said, "Let's give him a name, give him a nickname." Somebody said, "Well, he'd be the old grass cutter," and I said, "Here, old grass cutter, talk to him." He said, "Hello?" It's the old grass cutter. And he was fascinated. He got to St. Louis at the ball game. We parked in the parking area, and when we got out of the car, I figured out a plan. I said, "Norman, I'm not going in the ball game with you if you wear that stupid old coat." And when he took it off, I saw why he was wearing it. He had on 2 pair of dress pants that were split, both of them, all the way up the back. I said, "Put your coat back on, Norman." We went in the ball game. We turned that turnstile and walked in. And the first guy we saw was a little old guy with a T-top on. He had a shorts on right here. He didn't have a muscle on his body, but he thought he did. He had hair that stood out like a Brillo pad. He had a transistor radio great big under this arm. He had a big cup of something to drink in this arm, and he was bebopping in the ball game. He looked at Norman, never batted an eye. Looked at me a little strange. We got in. Norman didn't watch the game at all. He watched the crowd. 30,000 people. He said, "Could I have a hot dog?" I gave him a hot dog and then another one and then 10 more. And I gave him soda and peanuts. I never seen a machine eat like that. He just ate and ate and ate. And the seventh inning got there. And I forgot it was the seventh inning. Everybody in the place stood up to stretch. And I said, "Oh, yeah, Norman." But this time I had told him, because it was hot, he was perspiring. I said, "Just take your coat down and drape it over the seat." Sometime back around the third inning or so, and he draped it over the seat, and he was much more comfortable. But now it was the seventh inning, and we were standing all over the park, and I said, "Stand up, Norman, let's stretch." And we were just stretching away, and all of a sudden, I happened to glance behind me. The guy behind me was going. I said, "Sit down, Norman, sit down, sit down." It'd been a busy year. I've been working at the coal mine, and I was tired, and I've been singing in churches on the weekend, and I was telling the Lord about, because my vacation was coming up, and you know what the Lord told me? He said, "Won't you take Norman with you on vacation?" I said, "I'm going to Opryland, Lord. Norman at Opryland," I said, "Lord, I'm not going to do it now. I'm tired," and a couple of weeks later, we was going down the highway to Opryland, Norman sitting beside me, my wife and kids in the back. I noticed something about him. He was beginning to be relaxed around people. He was beginning to be less nervous, and he didn't talk to himself as much as he had before. We got to Opryland, and I didn't put him on the Wabash Cannonball, you know, because he's about 62 years old at the time, and I was afraid he might have a heart problem over that, you know. So I tried to pick out a ride he could handle, and I found the bumper cars. I said, "Norman, did you ever ride in a..." "No." I said, "Here's how they work. Push the pedal, turn the wheel, and get in, and have a good time. Get in there." We got him in there, and he sat down in that big old bumper car with all them kiddies and all them girlfriends that wanted to hit their boyfriends with their car and all the mothers that wanted to hit the fathers with a car, and he got everybody in the place called over to one side. They turned that right on. He had the whole crowd pinned, and he had his car sideways and had them jammed in over there, and they were mad. And he was looking around going, and looking at me going, and he couldn't figure it out. We began to laugh. We were standing outside that place. Tears began to run in my eyes. I said, "Look, come on, look at old Norman. He's got them, everyone caught over there." And the kids were going, "Whoa." And finally, somebody got loose. And the ride was about half over, and they felt like they'd been cheated, and they were in a hurry. They came all the way around that rink, and they wanted to hit somebody before that ride was over. And there sat Norman, and they hit him full speed ahead. He went, "Oh." And then he really tried to get that thing going. And here comes someone else, and they were starting to get loose now in great numbers. And one by one, they'd come around, and they'd hit Norman. And the Spirit of the Lord spoke to me at Opryland. And he said, That's what they've been doing to Norman all his life. People been hitting on him. They've been hitting on him. When they throw snowballs at him, like he's not a human being, they hit on him. When they bring him old junky clothes they wouldn't wear anymore theirself, they hit on him. And then he said something I'll never forget. He said, "That's what my children do, my children, to one another. They get mad because they can't play the piano or the organ, or they can't teach their favorite Sunday school class, or they gossip about the preacher, or they gossip about some lady or some man." And then he reminded me of the 13th chapter, 1 Corinthians. "Though I speak with the tongues of men and angels, though I have all faith so I could remove mountains, understand all mysteries, if I have no charity, love, I need another cassette tape, another book. No, it says I am nothing."
Wow, what a place to stop. I mean, that part of the story just really breaks my heart a little bit every time I hear it. Just how people were beating up on Norman, but also the lesson that God gave Mike Atkins in that moment. And you've been listening to Mike telling the story of a man called Norman on today's edition of Family Talk. I strongly encourage you to join us next time for the conclusion when we hear part two. Believe me, you don't want to miss the end of the story, do they, Dr. Dobson?
Yeah, before we end, Roger, that was a powerful message. It touched me again today. And I've heard it probably 25 times or more, especially the story of the bumper cars. What a great illustration that is. You know, we are commanded by the Savior to love one another, especially the down and outer and the one who is deeply wounded or deprived in one way or another. And I've received letters through the years and phone calls that have included something like this. "Dr. Dobson, my son is a lot like Norman. He breaks my heart because I love him so much. He's bright and he's beautiful, but he has autism, and he doesn't have a single friend. And I pray every day for an understanding person that will love him when I'm no longer here to take care of him. Now, I won't be here forever. What's going to happen to my son? I can only hope that he will find compassion and understanding." I want to say something else before we close. I'm going to ask you to look around on Sunday morning at the congregation at your church. How many people in wheelchairs do you see? You know there's a high percentage of people who are disabled one way or another. Do you see them there? What about the person who is mentally disabled and doesn't talk very well, and maybe he drools, and maybe he doesn't smell just like the rest of us? Is there anybody around him, anybody to put an arm around him, anybody that takes care of him? And the reason we're airing this story again is not just to entertain the listening audience, but to suggest that we think a little differently about those who need us and take people like that to lunch. Yeah. You know, especially, and I tell you this matters even more, I think, is the parents of kids who are either disabled or different in some way. Mm-hmm. Yes. They desperately need you to encourage them. And I've been preaching here, and I won't do that. We're going to let you hear the balance of the program next time, and we'll probably roll back a little bit so that the listener who's not tuned in today will get a feel for what this message is all about. And I hope that you will be with us next time as well.
Yes, as Dr. Dobson mentioned at the start of the program today, tens of thousands of people have requested the CD of this program, A Man Called Norman. And you'll be happy to know that we have it available in our resource center. We'll be happy to send it to you for a gift of any amount. So call us at 877-732-6825 to find out how to get a CD copy. Or go to our website, drjamesdobson.org, and you can download a copy of the program today.
And Roger, I would like in closing to suggest that people write me. I would love to hear what you think about what we're hearing today.
Yeah.
And also the program next time. When you've heard Mike Atkins' entire story, write and tell me what it meant to you, and I would really appreciate it. How can people reach us, Roger?
Well, it's easy to do. Of course, you can go online at drjamesdobson.org, or you can write to us at Family Talk, 540 Elkton Drive, Colorado Springs, Colorado, the zip code 80907. Thanks for listening today, and be sure to join us tomorrow to hear the end of Norman's story. That's on the next edition of Family Talk.
Family Talk is not associated with Focus on the Family.